Zechariah chapter 6. Now, as we pointed out, the Lord gave to Zechariah 10 visions. And visions are subject to interpretation. Oftentimes, the meaning of them is rather veiled. And unless the Lord gives the interpretation, then speculation is really foolishness, because everyone can have their own idea, and all of them without real credibility when you turn to speculation or the interpretation of the Scriptures. You hear people say, but there are so many interpretations. Yes, that is true. That is tragically true. I do not believe that God really desires that we try to interpret the Bible. I believe that the meaning that makes sense when you read it is the correct meaning. And if God uses symbolic language, if there is a basis in other scriptures for the symbolic language, then you can interpret it by the symbolism, as long as you have a constant base, as we talked to you about expositional constancy. That is, there are certain figures in the Bible that are used consistently through the Bible. For instance, in metals, brass is consistently used as a metal that symbolizes the judgment of God. Gold is a metal that symbolizes the heavenly scene. Silver is a metal that is symbolic of redemption. And so there is the expositional constancy in the use of these metals in symbolism. The same is true with certain colors. The blue for heaven, the purple for royalty, the red for the sacrifice, and the white for purity. And so there can be a interpreting of the various colors symbolically, if it calls for a symbolic interpretation, from the constancy there. Birds in the Scripture are always used in an evil sense as a part of the work of Satan. Remember in the parable of the sower, and he sowed some seed on the wayside, and the birds came and ate it up. And this is the enemy who comes and takes the word away before it has a chance to take root. Now, if you will follow the expositional constancy, you'll be all right in the understanding of parables, of visions and dreams in the Bible. But when you get out on your own and just start interpreting fancifully, then is where we get into all kinds of trouble. I do not believe in doing that. I do not practice that. Because I feel that anybody's guess is as good as mine, and I don't like to guess when I'm dealing with the Word of God. I like to deal with the facts and just stick with the facts. And where there are aspects where I do not fully understand, then I like to just say, this is something that I don't fully understand. And I said all of that to say that when we get to this 10th vision, I don't fully understand it. The Lord does not give a clear enough interpretation that we can know for certain what the Lord is speaking about on these various colored horses that go through the earth. But I turned and I lifted up my eyes and I looked, and behold, there came four chariots out from between the two mountains, and the mountains were mountains of brass. So we do have the brass, mountains of brass. So you're speaking of judgment. In the first chariot were red horses. In the second chariot, black horses. In the third chariot, white horses. In the fourth chariot, there were grizzled and bay horses. Now, these do not fit with the four horses in the book of Revelation chapter 6. There you began with the white horse, followed by the black, and then the red, and then the pale. You can't tie those two really together. Then I answered, and Jeremiah was the same problem I had. He didn't understand it. I answered and said unto the angel that talked with me, "What are these, my Lord?" And the angel answered and said unto me, "These are the four spirits of the heaven, which go forth from standing before the Lord of all of the earth. Now the black horses go forth into the north country. The white go forth after them. The grizzled go forth towards the south country. And the bay went forth and sought to go, that they might walk to and fro through the earth." He said, "Get you hence, walk to," he ordered the horses, "get going and walk to and fro through the earth." So they walked to and fro through the earth. Then cried he upon me and spake unto me, saying, "Behold, these that go toward the north country have quieted my spirit in the north country." Now that's all of the interpretation of this vision that is given. And I do confess, I do not understand the full implication, significance, or meaning of this particular vision. So you can read into it whatever you want, or you can choose to do as I have and just file it in the little cabinet up here, which has marked on the face of it, "Wait for further information." I've got a lot of things filed in that cabinet that I just am waiting for further understanding and further information. I do not have a complete knowledge of them as yet. Now, as we get into the next part, I have a much better understanding. We're not dealing with visions now, we're dealing with actualities. "And the word of the Lord came unto me, saying," that is to Zechariah, "take of them of the captivity," those that have come back from captivity, "even Heldiah and Tobijah and Jedaiah, which are come from Babylon, and come thou the same day and go into the house of Josiah, the son of Zephaniah. Then take silver and gold and make crowns, and set them upon the head of Joshua, the son of Josedech, the high priest. And speak unto him, saying, Thus speaketh the Lord of hosts, saying, Behold the man whose name is the branch, and he shall grow up out of his place, and he shall build the temple of the Lord. Even he shall build the temple of the Lord, and shall bear the glory, and shall sit and rule upon his throne, and he shall be a priest upon his throne, and the council of peace shall be between them both." Now the Lord ordered Zechariah to take these men and to make a gold and a silver crown, and to take Joshua, who was with Zerubbabel standing before the Lord, and to anoint Joshua, the son of the high priest, or to place this crown upon his head, and then to prophesy concerning the coming king, the branch. Now it is interesting that they would put the crown upon Joshua, who was a priest, thus from the tribe of Levi. The kingly tribe in Israel was Judah. God had promised that from David there should be one who would reign upon the throne. In fact, the branch is the name of the one from David. "And there shall arise from Jesse a branch." And it is predicted that the branch out of Jesse, tribe of Judah, would reign. But here is Joshua, the son of the high priest, being crowned, but then the prophecy given concerning the branch. The name Joshua, of course, is significant. It is the name Jesus. It is the Hebrew for the Greek Jesus. In Hebrew, it means Jehovah or Yah is salvation. And so it is significant, the name itself, that Joshua was crowned as a priest, but crowned to be the king, as a foreboding or of a prophecy of the crowning of Jesus as king, who is from the tribe of Judah, but also to be acknowledged as the priest. Now, in the book of Hebrews, the writer of Hebrews points out that Jesus is our great high priest who has entered into heaven for us. Now, for we Gentiles, we have no problem with that. Yes, Jesus is my great high priest, and I have no problem with Jesus being my high priest because I'm a Gentile. But if I were a Jew, and someone would say to me, well, Jesus is our great high priest, I would say, how can Jesus be the great high priest when he is from the tribe of Judah? The priesthood belongs to Levi. How could one from the tribe of Judah be a priest? And so the writer of the book of Hebrews, recognizing that that would be a problem to the Jews, declared that Jesus was a priest not after the order of Levite, but after a different priestly order, the order of Melchizedek, which was spoken of in the Scriptures. And he spoke of how when Abraham, returning from the spoiling of the five kings who had taken his nephew Lot as a captive, how he was returning with all of the spoils from these kings, having defeated them, and how Melchizedek, the king of Salem, came out to meet him, and how Abraham paid tithes to Melchizedek of all that he had. And Melchizedek was called the priest before the Lord. Now, of Melchizedek, we know nothing of his family background. We don't know where he was from. This was before Israel was ever a nation. This is when Abraham was in a strange land, actually. Who is Melchizedek? Where did he come from? What is his background? The Scripture is totally silent, but he was a priest of the Most High God, and he received tithes from Abraham, so that it shows that the order is actually a higher order of priests than was the Levites, because the Levites came from Abraham, and Abraham received the blessing of Melchizedek, and the lesser is blessed by the greater. So here is Melchizedek, a person of which we have no scriptural background, coming, blessing Abraham, receiving tithes from Abraham, and is acknowledged as a priest of the Most High God. So the author of Hebrews says that Jesus is a priest after the order of Melchizedek, which is actually a superior order of priesthood than that of Levi. Now, here is the crowning of the priest as king. And one day, Jesus will fulfill both roles as the high priest and as king. In fact, he fills those roles today. But here is the prophecy of the day that will come when Jesus will be acknowledged as the king. And so the prophecy is of the branch. And he will build the temple of the Lord. Now, this is why the Orthodox, the strict Orthodox Jews in Israel today are opposed to the current Israeli state. In the area in Jerusalem known as Mea Shearim, ultra-Orthodox, they have gone so far as to write a letter to King Hussein in Jordan asking King Hussein to annex Mea Shearim into Jordan. because they don't want any part of the Jewish state. They are of the feeling and opinion that the Jewish state has no right to exist until the Messiah comes and builds their temple. And they are using here in Zechariah the method by which the identity of the Messiah will be revealed to them, in that he will build the temple of the Lord. Now, this sets up these people to fulfill a prophecy that was made by Jesus Christ, who, when they rejected him, declared to them, "I came in my Father's name. You did not receive me. Another one is going to come in his own name, and him you will receive." In other words, Jesus predicted their accepting of the Antichrist in the beginning of his reign. Now, in Daniel chapter 9, we are told that the prince of the people that shall come, or the Roman Empire, and in this case the revived Roman Empire, or the European Community as it is more commonly called today, he will come and make a covenant with the nation Israel, but in the midst of that 7-year period, he'll break the covenant and set up the abomination which causes desolation. The temple is to be rebuilt, and I feel very soon there is an extremely powerful movement in Jerusalem right now dedicated to rebuilding the temple. Surely the temple will be standing during the time of the Great Tribulation. John is given a measuring stick and told to measure the new temple and its courts. That's during the tribulation period. Here in Zechariah, the prophecy of the branch is that he shall build the temple of the Lord. Even he shall build the temple of the Lord and shall bear the glory and sit and rule upon his throne. So they are looking today for someone to come and to initiate and to help them in the rebuilding of the temple. And you talk to the Orthodox Jews today and they will tell you that they are anticipating the Messiah to come soon, and they'll know him because he'll help them to build their temple. And thus, they are ripe for the accepting of the Antichrist when he comes with his plan to put the wall between the Dome of the Rock Mosque and the northern area of the Temple Mount, and grant the Jews the right to rebuild their temple. They will hail him immediately as their Messiah. But after 3.5 years, when the temple is built and he returns to the temple, he will then reveal his true identity through his blasphemy. And he will stand in the temple of God, proving that he is God and demanding to be worshipped as God, causing the daily sacrifices and prayers to cease. And they will set the image of the beast there in the temple, the image that they give power to speak. And men will be actually commanded and ordered at the force of death to worship the beast and his image. So, because Zechariah speaks of the branch building the temple, that is why they are looking for their Messiah now, and that's why they anticipate identifying him as their Messiah as he helps them build their temple. But Zechariah is looking a little further beyond the temple that will be built to the kingdom age temple described in Ezekiel that the Lord himself shall build, and he will bear the glory, and he will sit and rule upon his throne, and he shall be a priest upon his throne, and the council of peace shall be between them both. And the crowns shall be to Helam and Tobijah and to Jedaiah and to Han the son of Zephaniah for a memorial in the temple of the Lord. In other words, they were to make these crowns. They were to put the crowns upon Joshua. But then they were to set them in the temple as a reminder to the people of the future glory that would come yet to Israel when their true king comes and reigns. And so they were to be set there, and every time the people go in the temple, they'd see the gold and silver crown that had been put upon Joshua, or put upon Jesus, if you please, the Greek name. And it was a reminder that one day he will sit upon his throne in the temple and reign. The hope for them. And they that are far off shall come and build the temple of the Lord. I hope to be in that crew. I just hope that I don't be ordered to use a framing claw hammer. And ye shall know that the Lord of hosts hath sent me unto you, and this shall come to pass, and you will diligently obey the voice of the Lord your God. So that glorious day in the future when Jesus comes and reigns and there is obedience to him and to his kingdom. Now, some men came to Zechariah with a question. While they were in Babylon, they have been observing a couple of days of fasting. The day they commemorated the day that the temple was destroyed by the Babylonian army. And so they came to Zechariah with a question. It came to pass in the fourth year of King Darius that the word of the Lord came to Zechariah in the fourth day of the ninth month, even in Tislu, when they had sent unto the house of God Sherezer and Regemelech and their men to pray before the Lord, and to speak unto the priests which were in the house of the Lord of hosts, and to the prophets, saying, should I weep in the fifth month, separating myself as I have done these many years? So during the 70 years of captivity, there in the fifth month, there was this appointed fast commemorating the destruction of the temple. Then came the word of the Lord of hosts unto me, saying, so Zechariah went to the Lord with it, and God answered Zechariah, speak unto all the people of the land and unto the priests, saying, when you fasted and mourned in the fifth and seventh month, even for those 70 years, did you really fast unto me, even to me? And when you did eat and when you did drink, did you not eat for yourselves and drink for yourselves? Should ye not hear the words which the Lord hath cried by the former prophets when Jerusalem was inhabited and in prosperity, and the cities thereof round about her, when the men inhabited the south and the plain? In other words, the Lord is saying, look, I never ordered these fasts to begin with. They were weeping and fasting over the judgment that God had brought upon their fathers because their fathers had disobeyed the word of the Lord. But they had set them up as religious holidays, and they began to develop the ceremonies and the religious rituals surrounding these holidays, holidays that God had never ordained, holidays that God had never established, and God did not recognize them. Now, to the present day, there are, among the orthodoxy of the Jews, the celebration still of these 2 days, in the 5th month and in the 7th month. But God still doesn't look upon them. God said, look, wouldn't it have been better to have just listened to what the prophets of God had said to your fathers, rather than fasting and then going ahead and eating? It had been better that you just listened to what God had said. Now, in the 58th chapter of Isaiah, before this took place, Isaiah spoke to the people concerning their fasting, beginning with verse 3. Well, might as well begin with verse 1. Cry aloud, spare not, lift up thy voice like a trumpet. He's ordering Isaiah to do this. And show my people their transgression, and the house of Jacob their sins. Yet they seek me daily, they delight to know my ways, as a nation that did righteousness, and they forsook not the ordinance of their God. They ask of me ordinances of justice, they take delight in approaching God. Why have you fasted, they say. Why have we fasted, they say, and you have not seen us? Oh God, you know, we've fasted and you haven't paid any attention to us. We've afflicted our souls, and you didn't take knowledge of it. You know, the fasting and the, there's a word I can't think of it. The afflicting, the starts with a C, but it'll come to me. But God, you haven't really taken knowledge of it. Behold, God answers them. Why didn't you, Lord, you pay attention to us? Here we were fasting and afflicting ourselves. Why didn't you pay attention? And the Lord said unto them, behold, in the day of your fast you find pleasure, and you exact of all your laborers. You make everybody else work. Behold, you're fasting for strife and debate, and to smite with the fist of wickedness. You shall not fast as you do this day to make your voice to be heard on high. You're not really fasting to as unto the Lord. You're taking pleasure in these fast days. It's not a true affliction. Is it such a fast that I have chosen? Did I choose this kind of a fast, the Lord said? A day for a man to afflict his soul? Is it to bow down his head as a bulrush and to spread sackcloth and ashes under him? These were the ways they were afflicting themselves, lying on burlap or camel's skin, which is very rough and coarse, and putting ashes on themselves and all. God said, did I ask you to do this? Do you call this a fast that is an acceptable day to the Lord? Is not this the fast, God said, that I have chosen? Isn't this the way I would rather have you fast? To loose the bands of wickedness, to undo the heavy burdens, to let the oppressed go free, and to break every yoke. That's, God said, the kind of fast I'd like you to do. Just set at liberty those that are bound, your slaves and all. Turn them free. Isn't the fast that I have chosen to deal your bread to the hungry, and that you bring the poor that are cast out into thy house? If you want to really fast, the Lord, prepare a great meal and call the poor in and feed the poor. God says, I'd like that kind of a fast. I'll accept that kind of a fast. When you see the naked, that you cover him, and that you hide not yourself from thine own flesh. Then shall thy light break forth as the morning, and thy health shall spring forth speedily, and thy righteousness shall go before thee, and the glory of the Lord shall be thy rear reward, or thy rearward. Then shalt thou call, and the Lord shall answer. Thou shalt cry, and he shall say, here I am. And if thou take away from the midst of thee the yoke, and the putting forth of the finger, and the speaking of vanity. So, people can get into religious rituals, fast days even, that God didn't order. Now, they said, shall we continue these? God said, I didn't ask you to do them in the first place. You know, they weren't true fasts unto me. It'd be better that you would take a day where you just really sit down and hearken unto what happened and realize that what happened, happened because of their disobedience. Here you're grieving over the loss of the temple. You should be grieving over the unrepentant heart of your fathers that caused the loss of the temple. You should be grieving over the fact that they wouldn't listen to God. And so you've set up your own holidays. But I didn't order these holidays. Wait a minute. Lord, shall we still observe December 25th? You say, all right, stay off of that. You're stepping on my toes. Where did God ever order man to observe the birthday of Jesus Christ? Shall we still observe the 10th month and the 4th month, Lord? Or the 12th month and the 4th month? You see, these are holidays that men have established. We have our Lent season. God never ordered a Lent season. God never ordered an Ash Wednesday, a Good Friday, or a meatless Friday. These are the impositions of man. You might think about that. Because when God was questioned concerning these holidays that they had set up, God did not really recognize it. He said, I didn't ask you to do that. Better that you just really hear the words which the Lord has cried by the prophets when Jerusalem was inhabited and prosperous and the cities around about her were inhabited. And the word of the Lord came unto Zechariah, saying, thus speaketh the Lord of hosts, saying, execute true judgment and show mercy, compassions to every man his brother. That's what God really desires. You know, you say, oh, I want to fast. Well, God says, hey, I would rather you just be fair. You be honest. You be merciful and you be compassionate to each other. Don't oppress the widow, nor the fatherless, nor the stranger or the poor. Let none of you imagine evil against his neighbor in his heart. These are the things that God will take notice of. These are the things that God will delight in. These are the things that God is asking you to do, not to fast, but to do these things. But the Lord said they refused to hearken. They pulled away the shoulder. They stopped their ears that they should not hear. These are the things the prophets were telling their fathers, and they wouldn't listen to them. Yea, they made their hearts as an adamant stone, lest they should hear the law and the words which the Lord of hosts had sent in his spirit by the former prophets. Therefore, there came great wrath from the Lord of hosts. Therefore, it has come to pass that as he cried and they would not hear, so they cried and I would not hear, saith the Lord of hosts. Isn't that an awesome thing? God said, look, I cried unto you and you wouldn't listen. I was asking you to be fair, to be honest, to be compassionate, to be merciful, to take care of the widow and the stranger and the poor, to clothe the naked, to feed the hungry. I cried unto you, but you wouldn't answer me. Therefore, when you cried unto me, I didn't answer you. To obey is better than to sacrifice. It is important that we be obedient to the word of the Lord. That we, each one tonight, make the application to ourselves. That we give ear, give heed to the Word of God, so that when we are in need and we are in trouble, when we cry unto God, that He will listen to us. And so they were scattered with a whirlwind among the nations whom they knew not. Thus the land was desolate after them, that no man passed through nor returned. For they laid, that is the Babylonian army, laid the pleasant land desolate. Now again the word of the Lord came unto Zechariah, saying, Thus saith the Lord of hosts, I was jealous for Zion with great jealousy. I was jealous for her with great fury. Thus saith the Lord, I am returned unto Zion. I will dwell in the midst of Jerusalem, and Jerusalem shall be called the city of truth, and the mountain of the Lord of hosts, the holy mountain. So this is a promise of the future age when God will return, when Jesus comes and establishes His kingdom upon the earth and will reign from Mount Zion over the earth. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, there shall yet be old men and old women dwelling in the streets of Jerusalem, and every man with his staff in his hand for very age. And the streets of the city shall be full of boys and girls playing in the streets thereof. What a picturesque scene of the future kingdom, when boys and girls are playing together in the streets in complete safety. Very picturesque. Thus saith the Lord of hosts. Let me say that God sees the kingdom age in perfection. And the perfection is when boys and girls can play together safely in the streets. There are some people that are so spiritual that they think that children ought not to play together. In the kingdom age it shall be so. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, if it is marvelous in the eyes of the remnant of this people in these days, hey, you think this is great,